wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say.
You are listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. on WGXC Hands On Community Radio 90.7 FM. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story with the prison system, or you have ideas for the program, or you would like to get involved, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534.
I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live like I'm longing to live. I wish I could do all the things that I can do, though I'm way overdue. I'd be starting anew. Well, I wish I could be like a bird in the sky. How sweet it would be if out my heart I could fly. I'd soar to the sun and look down at the sea. Then I'd sing, 'cause I know, yeah.
Good morning. You are listening to WGXC, the Prison Voices Project on 90.7 FM. We're currently in our summer pledge drive. WGXC 90.7 FM is a creative community radio station based in New York's Greene and Columbia counties. Hands-on access and participation activate WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Contributions can be made to help support the operation of WGXC by calling 518-697-7400 or online at wavefarm.org/WGXC/donate and click the Donate Now button on the left side of the screen. Check contributions are also acceptable. Checks should be made payable to WGXC and mailed to 5662 Route 23, Acre, New York, 12405. WGXC's pledge drives consist of small donations of $5 to $50 from a wide range of contributors. WGXC is a program division of the 501c3 nonprofit arts organization Wavefarm, and contributions to WGXC are tax deductible to the full extent of the law.
May there be peace and love and perfection throughout all creation. O God, may there be peace and love and perfection throughout all creation. O God, may there be peace and love and perfection throughout all creation.
Good Morning Again. That was Alice Coltrane, The Sun. And we will now move into our first interview with Professor Salvatore Ingle DeMauro. I spoke with him about issues of environmental justice and food justice as they relate to the prison industrial complex. Our guest, Salvatore Ingle DeMauro, who is a associate professor of geography at SUNY New Paltz. I'll let him talk a little bit about himself, but today's show will be dealing with questions of food justice, environmental justice, and the prison industrial complex. But before we get into any and all of that, Dr. Ingle DeMauro, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe where you were born, how long you've been in the States, whatever.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, and it's quite an honor. I'm from Italy originally, from the north of Italy near the Alps, and been in the States for now, 35 years or something like that. It's been a long time, on and off anyway. The sort of stuff that I study is typically soils, and I've been trying since my graduate years to connect with something a bit more meaningful. I was very fortunate to be in the same program as Ruthie Gilmore, who's written Golden Gulag, and she was quite influential on me. And later on, I had the pleasure also of meeting and listening to Laura Whitehorn, and she drove a lot of points home that resonated with me about prisons in general, just like Ruthie had ages before. And so I've been trying to connect my concerns about environmental degradation and food access and agriculture with the incarceration of masses of people, not just obviously in the States, which is it's very close to home right now, but also in Italy and other places.
I began by asking Professor Ingle DeMauro to discuss broadly his understanding of the relationship between prison farming, prison gardening, and the prison industrial complex.
From what I know so far, I mean, there are many aspects that one can include about these connections, but there are obviously, maybe not so obviously, the connections between plantation systems and incarceration, and that is gone. It's something that is continuous to this day, in which you had slave laborers who then become imprisoned laborers later on in the 20th century, and that still goes on to this day. Like in Louisiana, for example, you've got these plantations of cotton, but there are also other issues as well, like the health of the people inside, and what kind of food they get, what kind of access to what kind of environment. And that's something that, in terms of the history of food justice, environmental justice in particular, it seems to be very rare that people are making these connections still. Mm. And so that's something that I'd like to work on. And I know some others, very few are working on. But broadly speaking, one can think about building of the prison industrial complex as having an environmental impact. Some people have been looking at that, and California is one of those examples. I think Craig Gilmore has written an article in 2006 about this, and in which some people, like in Oakland area, I think, were making the connection between environmental degradation and the building of a prison complex. Now that can go both ways, because sometimes, like for example, there's of the many facilities in Hudson Valley, there are also a few which have, you know, natural preserves that are being made out of these prisons. Mm. As well, and they become like natural habitat, for some species. and it's crazy. So mm-hmm. It's like with war zones as well. It's kind of similar. You've got these, like one of the most well-kept nature preserves is the boundary between South and North Korea. You know, it's just there because, you know, it's just lack of access,
right.
You know, allows a lot of people, a lot of species to, I guess, thrive. But in any case, that's not the kind of, so we have to look at many different sides of this issue is, from both a historical perspective in terms of the overall impact of prisons on people, as well as environment, and also how prisons themselves can be used as an excuse to say, oh look, we can, you know, build natural preserves and like have nice scenic farmland, you know, around prisons, and isn't that nice? And in the meantime, you know, people are getting screwed over. But in terms of food justice and environmental justice in particular, I think like Martin Luther King was making some sort of connections already, what, in 67, you know, before he got murdered, in terms of the health workers and the environment which they were working in. Now, that was not extended to the prisons, but I don't think, I think it's just a short step away. If you've got you know, a lot of people that are getting inside, you know, there, and this is something that I've been wanting to work on and alert people to, is that they're being put in a hazardous place. Just like when you have poor working conditions or prison conditions are environmental hazards. So who gets placed in these kinds of environmental hazards should be looked at as an environmental justice issue, which is something that carries over from what Martin Luther King was already talking about with respect to the workplace.
Okay.
With respect to food justice, I already touched upon that as well, but this can be connected in terms of land access. And historically, you know, African-American farmers, you know, as it was mentioned by one article they alerted me to, which is a wonderful one, about Soul Five Farm that we'll talk about a bit later on. But the connection between the civil rights movement and African-American farmers, you know, is really tight, and tighter than I ever imagined myself, so I got educated on it. And but, you know, that the land issue is particularly important because by having a history of forced landlessness, if you like, and lack of adequate access to food, that's one way in which people are put into situations of dependency, and of context that then can promote people being in desperate situation enough so that it creates the conditions for incarceration as well. And so that's another thing that one can think about in terms of the history of who makes food, who has access to what food, as intimately related to land issues, and then people being forced off the land and forced into conditions in which they can't even feed themselves, and economically dependent on a system that is white establishment, that creates also the context in which people, most people of color, you know, overwhelmingly get incarcerated. I mean, that's one of those connections that one can try to draw out historically between all these different.
Some more local issues. I then asked questions surrounding prison farming and prison agriculture within the Hudson Valley.
From my limited experiences, Chonga maximum security and Woodbourne medium security, at least I've noticed that there is quite an awareness, an acute awareness on the part of the people inside, that of the importance of both having adequate food to eat and also the importance of growing their own food. Now, historically, in New York State, from what I've learned, is that most of the, throughout the United States, as far as I'm aware, most of the burgeoning prison industrial complex came out during the 1980s and expanded rapidly in the rural areas as never before, because it used to be more in the rural and in the urban and peri-urban, or like around the cities. And so one of the things that happened early on, it seemed, besides the plantation turning to prisons, which is still practiced in some places in this country, but there was some farmland around places like Woodbourne Prison, which I think used to be a boarding school, and the people inside used to be able to farm outside, you know, this this huge amount of farmland surrounding the prison complex. That was taken away when New York State was having a budget problem. As usual, they take it out on the people inside. You know, one of the first people to lose out, you know, education, land, you name it, and health. And so this was part of that entire scheme of slashing budgets. It was also to privatize, you know, to sell a lot of land around prisons. So what happened in Woodbourne, for example, is that eventually the people inside, you know, were clamoring and got, you know, after a lot of struggle, from what I heard from them, they got a courtyard within the prison turned into a garden. And I'll have to talk about what the difference is between farming and gardening in a moment. But basically a courtyard that was there was a whole bunch of debris and asphalt or actually cement was just covered over by some imported soil. In fact, I was teaching soil science to people there, and we got to dig, and I got to see actually what it looks like. It's very thin soil. It's not exactly the best, but still, it was marvelous what they could grow. And that was one way in which, actually, it's a two-edged sword. And one way in which they could get fresh vegetables that otherwise you wouldn't get, and they're so expensive anyway. And you know better than I, you know what that you know, what it's like to get proper food. But also the double-edged part of that is that. There's a long queue to get into, you know, the garden, and so you know the guards can use that, you know, as a blackmail, and you know that can also work some tensions that really need not be there, because if you had all that huge farmland outdoors, I mean, in which people inside could go outside and farm like they used to, then they could also dispense with a whole bunch of very expensive, crappy food, if you pardon the expression. Mm-hmm. The least nutritious, most unhealthy food coming from the same corporation that brings us the same sort of sordid food at the universities, like where we're at, you know, Sodexo. All that could be cut out, and people could actually feed themselves and actually even have a surplus to sell, so that they could also save some money. Now, at maximum security in Shangnam, the situation is really dire. And I know that the people inside, you know, I've spoken to them about this. I've asked them, you know, what steps they're trying to take to get some sort of garden put into place. There's loads of space, even within the compound, in which they could do it. And it's already covered in soil. You don't even have to make any effort to build up soil in within that maximum security complex. So there's no reason why they shouldn't be there. And so they told me that, you know, they've been petitioning for years, but they're very stubborn in the administration. And I'm not sure, you know, what the best steps would be to help them out with this. And one of the things that I was hoping to do is compare, you know, notes with Woodbourne and see how they sorted that out, but I've not been invited back to Woodbourne, so that's not going to happen anytime soon.
So you are at least knowledgeable of what you're referring to as a garden at Woodbourne, and then the possibilities for some type of farming at Shawangunk, which kind of pulls us to the question that I was getting at before. Can you tell us the difference between prison gardening versus prison farming?
Yeah, it's similar to the problem of terminology that one encounters with gardening and farming in general. I mean, farming is usually regarded as something that is of bigger scale, like when you produce mass amounts of vegetables or cereal crops or whatever, or meat. And gardening is usually regarded as something small scale, just for feeding oneself. And you know, there's a lot of confusion out there about this. So I mean, I tend to view urban or prison gardening or whatever gardening as actually a form of farming.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me. And you know, most people will think that that's just gardening for just subsistence, for just feeding oneself. That's usually the way that it's divided up. So feeding oneself, primarily gardening, and usually vegetables and maybe small animals or whatever, like poultry. And then farming will be like the big, huge expanse of areas, you know, to produce for a surplus so that you can.
Can you interview by discussing the variety of benefits that come from prison gardening and prison farming?
I guess, you know, what do you consider to be the benefits of farming for those who are incarcerated? And you can tackle this question any way that you want. But I would believe, based upon this conversation, that there are a litany of benefits. So could you share with our listeners some of those benefits?
Yeah, there really are a lot. And it's really a shame that the farms that used to be around the prisons were sold off. It's really, I mean, even if one looks at it from a very mainstream perspective, it just doesn't make any sense. Because you're having the possibility of people leading healthier lives, so that cuts down on the healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go outdoors, and that can also decrease a lot of tension. Because, I mean, if you're caged, you're not going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can go outdoors every day and concentrate on growing something, it's really different. That's also, you know, psychologically very important.
Okay.
And I spoke, I mean, to people inside about this, and that's what they were telling me about the garden, how important it was for them to do the garden, because it really made them feel like they were worth something, for example, because they were producing, you know?
Right.
And so there's that aspect. The other aspect is dietary. The diet in prisons are just woefully, I mean, just terrible. And I mean, one way of getting ill with diabetes is one of the probably prevalent illnesses that I would suspect are in the prison systems. I mean, that could be avoided with a healthier diet, with the intake of fresh vegetables instead of the rubbish that comes in cans. And also fruits could be grown as well around, especially in the Hudson Valley.
Yeah, that was another question that I had. You know, what are some of the fruits and vegetables that you are aware of that can be grown within this Mid-Hudson area that are specific to the environment and that would make logical sense to be produced at, you know, some of the 15 odd facilities that are around the Mid-Hudson Valley?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It's something that needs to be investigated further. But I know that, for example, because it depends on the type of soil you have.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
But I know that at Woodburn facility, they could grow maize, corn, they could grow wheat, they could grow a whole bunch of cereal crops, alongside many different vegetables. They could even grow mustard greens, all sorts of greens. Okra could be grown there if you do it properly.
Hmm.
If you put greenhouses up,
okay,
you could grow a whole bunch of vegetables that might not be able to grow very easily. I know some folks in Newport who grow figs, which, you know, it doesn't grow very well in this area because the climate is not right for it.
Right.
But if you do it properly, if you know what you're doing, and then you can actually even grow figs. I mean, it's amazing. Otherwise, it's apples, pears, you know, nectarines, something like that, grapes. Like grapes would be really cool to grow because that could fetch a lot more money for the prison. The prison
right.
So, and the other thing is that, you know, corollary to that is that as the people inside are doing this, if they were allowed to do this, they would get loads of skills, all sorts of skills,
right,
from the management of a farm to the marketing of vegetables to the knowledge about the environmental impact of different kinds of farming techniques. And these are all things that most people don't even know about because, you know, they're just not being taught about it, and they've been alienated from it. And in fact, this would put a lot of people from the, inside on the cutting edge as well of what needs to happen in the next decade.
So you had mentioned something about the environmental impact, and I guess, you know, how is farming environmentally beneficial given the amount of facilities that we have here? Like, well, you know, so there's a variety of reasons that we can come up with that to justify the importance of prison gardening and prison farming. But even at an environmental level, what are the environmental benefits of farming, period, that we can then use to contextualize why there should be more gardening and farming going on at these various facilities throughout the Mid-Hudson Valley?
But yeah, another brilliant question, really. It really depends on how it's done. Because if it's, like for example, the gardening that was done inside Woodbourne Medium Security, that was all organic. Right, and the people inside were adamant about it being organic, and they were really very, I mean, they're very sharp folks anyway, but they knew what they were doing, and it's not like they were just spraying anything just to make it grow. They were really worried about their own health as well. I mean, they saw the connection, and not just because they fed themselves, but I think they got also the idea, they developed the idea that, you know, what kind of impact is going to have on other people,
right?
You know, if they're going to give the vegetable. They loaded me up with a huge bag of vegetables by the end of that summer. It was amazing. It was really scrumptious food. But it really depends on how it's done. If it's done like a lot of mainstream farming, in which a lot of pesticides are used, a lot of biocides, you know, a lot of fungicides and stuff like that, it's stuff that is going to be, and that we have a problem with already from the previous decades, and for the next generations to come, that people are getting, you know, poisoned land out of this. So it really is crucial to have this done properly, and we do have the know-how in this area of the world. Loads of people know how to farm organically, and this could be transferred into the prison system fairly easily as an education program, as well as a form of justice, really.
Right.
Because having access to proper food is a justice issue.
I do think that it's a very good point that you're making, that it is not merely about having farming and gardening at these facilities, but it's also having the correct type of farming and gardening that is, you know, going to provide the necessary health benefits for those who are going to be, you know, consuming these foods.
And I should add something else, because if the people inside are going to be farming, first of all, if they're going to be applying pesticides, that's actually a health risk for them. And so that also must be avoided at all costs. And the same goes with what kind of farm they're going to, what kind of land they're going to farm. I mean, it needs to be tested. People need to be aware. I mean, if you've got like lead-laden soil, I mean, that's what they're going to breathe, you know, all this lead. So, you know, all that has to be properly done. Otherwise, you know, it could be a nightmare, and could put a lot of people inside in more danger. And so all these issues also have to, you know, be resolved as well while doing this.
Indeed. To think about, you know, returning citizens, those who are reentering society after leaving correctional facilities, again, you know, think about or share with our listeners some of the benefits that a person who was formerly incarcerated might bring back to their communities if they were a part of, you know, prison gardening or prison farming initiative.
Yeah, that's a huge issue, and I know that some folks have been trying to do some work in on that score of introducing people inside who are going to be finally, you know, re-entering as citizens as everybody else, and what this, you know, farming, either farming or gardening, provides is a set of skills that allows them to find a job. One of the biggest issues of reentry is to be able to pay back debts to folks.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you come out already in debt and you can't find a job because nobody's going to offer it to you, as well, you know, that's a huge trauma in itself. If you can already like be channeled into a workplace, that will be certainly beneficial. The other thing is that people inside are going to go outside, and they could be teachers as well. They could be teaching their skills. They could show, like my dear friend Maroon Schultz, who's in prison right now. he makes a connection. Now, if you got a lot of people, you know, re-entering citizens who have the skills and knowledge about how to grow food and how to work the land, they can show a whole bunch of youth, for example. They can involve them, and it's been happening. Like in Pittsburgh, that's what we're trying to do, for example. They're trying to make these connections so that you can also avoid the cycle of people going into prisons in and out, especially with youth. But other than that, knowing how to handle money, that's something that they need skills as well. The knowing about the environmental and health consequences of the ways that food is grown. These are all sorts of things that one can then use to bring back to the community.
Those were just a few of the very important excerpts that came from my interview with geography professor at SUNY New Paltz, Salvatore Engel Tamayo. We're currently in our summer pledge drive. WGXC 90.7 FM is a creative community radio station based in New York's Greene and Columbia counties. Hands-on access and participation activate WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Contributions can be made to help support the operation of WGXC by calling 518-697-7400 or online at wavefarm.org/WGXC/donate and click the Donate Now button on the left side of the screen. Check contributions are also acceptable. Checks should be made payable to WGXC and mailed to 5662 Route 23, Acre, New York, 12405. WGXC's pledge drives consist of small donations of $5 to $50 from a wide range of contributors. WGXC is a program division of the 501c3 nonprofit arts organization Waveform, and contributions to WGXC are tax deductible to the full extent of the law. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, the Prison Voices Project. We next had a conversation with Jalal Akbar Sabar. I began by asking him to tell us a little bit about himself and how he began to connect issues of environmental justice, prison justice, and the prison industrial complex.
Yeah, I'm Jalal Sabar. I'm a farmer and an organizer. In Germantown, New York, which is by Hudson. I guess how I started was just connecting to some political prisoners that were in prison and connecting to my father, meeting my father for the first time. He's a farmer in Pennsylvania, and meeting him, I was actually doing a lot of environmental justice work, trying to address environmental racism in the city with some organizations like We Act. And then meeting my father, I got more involved in like food justice and farming. And the prison stuff has always been around. It's something that I always want to focus on. Historical analysis and some of my inspirations. I think I was telling you before, like Malcolm X has been a real inspiration to me. He has this quote where he says,
"Revolution is based on land. Land is the basis of all independence. Land is the basis of freedom, justice, and equality."
And since, it's just Malcolm's birthday not too long ago, I want to make sure that we bring him and his spirit into this conversation and let people know that Malcolm grew up on a farm. His father was a Garveyite. And so the work that I'm doing is directly connected to that legacy of Malcolm X. And hearing that quote made sure that we can, connect land to our justice movement, you know, and making sure that if we really want to have freedom, we need to look how we have access to land and how we're using land and land use and getting back to the land and talking about how land has been stolen from us and stolen from our culture, and land was promised to us and never given to us, and using land as a way to regain that power has been a lot of like the analysis on like why I do this work. Mm. and knowing the history of like not just Malcolm X, but you know, Harriet Tubman. Mm. You know, we know the history of Harriet Tubman. She was freeing the slaves, but she was also like farming at the same time. And she was feeding the slaves. Right. Oh, she was feeding not slaves, but enslaved Africans. Right. They are Africans that were enslaved. She was making sure that she can find us liberation from enslavement, but also feed us and like use the land for our liberation. And there's other figures too. When we think about Fannie Lou Hamer, mm-hmm. She wasn't just organizing in Mississippi through the Democratic Party and making sure that we had rights to vote in the Civil Rights Movement. She also had a farm cooperative, right? So she had the Freedom Farm Cooperative in Mississippi that was bringing our resources together, making sure that we can use farming land as a way for economic empowerment and a way to improve the conditions of our community. And so, like, knowing that history about Malcolm and Harriet Tubman and Fannie Lou Hamer, and there's a bunch of other folks too that were like using land as a way to really find liberation. And so that's like a lot of the basis for the work that we're doing now. And so the work that we're doing now has been inspired, like I said, directly from Herman Bell is one of my mentors. He's a political prisoner. He's a former Black Panther. And I think also, yeah, I didn't even talk about the Panthers. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get into Herman, but just like to mention the Panthers, like what the Black Panthers were doing was really big, right? They were feeding our communities. They were making sure that we had free breakfast programs and we had free health clinics. And so how we can like have healthy, vibrant, nutritious, strong, educated community, you know, and that was happening. And that's definitely like a strong inspiration for the work that we're doing, because they were doing like service-based organizing and like making sure that they were providing a great service, but also doing political education at the same time and organizing our people for justice and equality. And what happened, though? What happened to the Panthers? They got met with a lot of repression from the police and from the state.
Right.
And so a lot of those Panthers went underground and started the Black Liberation Army. And a lot of those folks were met with more repression from the state. And some are in exile, like Assad Shakur. And some have been in prison for the last 40 years, like Herman, Robert Seth Hayes, Jalil, just a few in New York. And so knowing that history too, wanted to build with them and seeing how we can kind of reinvigorate the work that they were doing in the 60s and 70s. And Herman Bell was connected to some farmers in Maine in like the early 90s. And so he connected to these farmers in Maine where they were growing food in Maine and getting it to the people in the city. So he connected to these farmers in Maine, and they had some land that they were willing to like get some volunteers to help like grow a bunch of like organic food before people were talking about organic food. Mm. And connected with organizations like Malcolm X Grassroots and MPTM and a couple other like black-led organizations to get it to Brooklyn and to the Bronx and Newark, New Jersey, and different neighborhoods that didn't have access to like healthy food. And they were just going and giving it out for free. And so when I was doing organizing through Malcolm X Grassroots and organizing some of our Black August concerts, wanted to make that connection to what Herman was doing with the Victory Gardens Project, and just basically started building a relationship with him and going up to visit him. And I had some relationships with some other farmers that knew Herman also and that were a part of that Victory Gardens project. And we all would just go up to build with Herman and talk about ways that we can do that work that was, like, really transformative. And so, like, the thing that we came up with was that we're going to create this larger alliance of, like, prisoners and farmers and activists that would address a couple of issues around, like, the connection to food and prison. And one thing that Herman stressed was access to transportation and, like, making sure that people in prison, their families can get up there, right? So he knew that it was, like, a big ordeal because of the disconnection between prisons in rural neighborhoods and the people that are getting incarcerated in urban neighborhoods. And so most of the prisons, 90% of the prisons are in rural New York. When we're talking about New York, and this can go across the country, but when we're talking about New York, 90% of the prisons are in rural areas where there's, like, little to no transportation, very little public transportation. You might have to take a train to a cab to get to a prison, right? And that's not available for a lot of the prisons. But then we also know that who's getting incarcerated, right? It's seven neighborhoods and the city count for 75% of the people in these rural prisons. So just seven neighborhoods is 75% of the people in prison in New York State. And you know the neighborhoods, right? It's the Bronx, it's South Bronx, it's Harlem, it's Brooklyn, you know, it's Lower East Side. It's like all the neighborhoods where black and brown people are,
Right. Those
are the neighborhoods that are being incarcerated and getting their families and getting pushed upstate to these rural prisons and their families not able to, like, see them and stay connected with them. And then I think for me, being a farmer, is like making that connection between, like, yo, these seven neighborhoods are the same seven neighborhoods that don't have access to food, you know, and don't, you know, can't get some greens and can't get, like, access to food where these prisons are at.
Right.
And so being up at the prison, trying to make this project where we're actually providing transportation from the families in the city to, like, stay connected to their families in these rural prisons, but also get a package of food. So it's addressing the food access piece at the same time.
So could you explain to the listeners how the Victory Bus project works?
All right. So, yeah, so that project, we call it the Victory Bus Project. And after the Victory Gardens project. And so we were starting at where Herman was at in Sullivan and going to that hub of prisons in Sullivan, Woodburn, Eastern, Ulster, and doing that once a month and doing the outreach from within the prison and getting people to tell their families to call us, and we would pick them up from the city. You know, for the last couple of years, we've been developing it for the last 2 years, where we would pick people up once a month and go to Sullivan from the city. Been doing door-to-door stuff. And basically, we're saying, like, you buy a package of food from, like, the food that we were growing and the food that some of our friends are growing, and you get a ride to these prisons. And we're charging, like, half the price of what a lot of these transportation companies are charging. And you're getting a package of food. So, and we're talking about, like, how do we support you and how do we, like, organize ourselves while we're on these trips. And so we're doing a lot of political education while we're on these trips. And then while we're going to the prisons, connecting to farms. And so using our connections to these rural communities and to the farm communities where we're getting the food from, and, like, having that as a place to reconnect families to the land and talking about and actually showing people where the food is coming from, and not just having, like, upstate New York as a place where people are getting warehoused and imprisoned, but as a place where you're getting some fresh food that is, like, feeding your family, you know.
what type of food will the participants receive on the trip?
And so right now we just try to make it like local. So, and it's local, you know, all our farms are not like certified organic, but they're all like organic, sustainable farms that we work with. Most of the people that we know, the vegetable farmers, are really like into like growing food and don't have a time to grow the food and connect to the people that they want to feed. Mm-hmm. And so this project is kind of like having a space for the farmers to build a relationship that they actually want to get the food too, you know, the people that actually need the food. And so, you know, it's like vegetables, fruits, whatever, you know, we get some eggs, try to get like some dairy and stuff, but mostly like vegetables and fruits like all the times, and try to put in some eggs. And it's all for like, you know, half the price of what, you know, the transportation companies are getting. And so a lot of times you can, there's enough food where you can deliver it as a food package, right, to the relatives that you're seeing, but also bring it home with you. And because we're selling food, you can use your food stamps too. But yeah, we're trying to build it where it's year round and we can do this project. But we're trying to get it going. We need more people to like get involved and like get the word out about how we can get families on the trips.
If there are people who are inside and they would like to get their families connected to the Victory Rush Project, how would they do so?
We're building a website, but you can just call me directly. My number is 917-704-3354. It's 917-704-3354. My name is Jalal. And you can call us directly. If you want to write, you can write us. The farm is in Germantown, New York. It's 4872 Route 9G, Germantown, New York, 12526.
You are listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM. Victory Bus Rides connects families with food and transportation to prisons. Pickup locations are in Brooklyn, Manhattan, the Bronx, and Westchester. These are weekly trips that travel from the previously mentioned locations to Bedford Hills, Taconic, and Sing Sing on the first Saturday and Sunday of the month, to Sullivan, Woodburn, Eastern, and Ulster on the second Saturday and Sunday of the month, to Greenhaven, Downstate, Fishkill, Shawangunk, and Wallkill to the third Saturday and Sunday of the month, to Green, Coxsackie, and Hudson on the fourth Saturday and Sunday of the month. Buy a box of farm fresh fruits, vegetables, eggs, and dairy and get a free ride to upstate correctional facilities. You can take it home, give it as a food package, or both. Contact Victory Bus Rides for more information. Reservations must be reserved by Friday morning prior to the Saturday or Sunday visit. Contact Jalal Sabar at 917-704-3354 or jalal.sabur@gmail.com. I got involved with WGXC because it provides a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. As you know, we are currently in our summer pledge drive. Contributions can be made to help support the operation of WGXC by calling 518-697-7400 or online at waveform.org/WGXC/donate and clicking the Donate Now button on the left side of the screen. Check contributions are also acceptable. Checks should be made payable to WGXC and mailed to 5662 Route 23, Akron, New York, 12405. WGXC's pledge contributions consist of small donations of $10 to $50 from a wide range of contributors. WGXC is a program division of the 501c3 nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, and contributions to WGXC are tax deductible to the full extent of the law. Thank you.
all love, all love, all love. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel, barbecue tofu. No fish though, no candy bars, no cigarettes. Only ganja, fresh squeezed juice from oranges. Exercising daily to stay healthy. And I rarely drink water out the tap cause it's filthy.
Lentil soup is mental fruit and ginger root is good for the youth. Fresh vegetable with them Ita stew. Sweet yam fries with the green hallelujah. Careful how you season and prepare your foods, cause you don't wanna lose vitamins and minerals, and that's the jewel. Life brings life, it's valuable. So I eat what comes from the ground, it's natural. Let your food be your medicine, no accelerant. Strictly herb generates from the sun, cause I got melanin and drink water. 8 glasses a day, cause that's what they say.
They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We got to start taking better care of ourselves. They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We got to start taking better care of ourselves. Be healthy, y'all.
Listening to Dead Presence track entitled Be Healthy. And this is the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM. We're currently in our summer pledge drive. WGXC 90.7 FM is a creative community radio station based in New York's Greene and Columbia counties. Hands-on access and participation activate WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Contributions can be made to help support the operation of WGXC by calling 518-697-7400 or online at wavefarm.org/WGXC/donate and click the Donate Now button on the left side of the screen. Check contributions are also acceptable. Checks should be made payable to WGXC and mailed to 5662 Route 23, Acre, New York, 12405. WGXC's pledge drives consist of small donations of $5 to $50 from a wide range of contributors. WGXC is a program division of the 501c3 nonprofit arts organization Wavefarm, and contributions to WGXC are tax deductible to the full extent of the law.
You have been listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. on WGXC Hands-On Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story, or you have ideas for the program, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, second floor, Hudson, New York, 12534. If you have feedback about what you have just heard, you can email us at feedback@wgxc.org. Thanks for listening.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
shine.